the first thing I always say to people is you've got to get rid of this idea of fairness that if you're doing a good job, you get paid really well. It's not. It's if you're able to create demand and supply tension, you get paid really well. So in practical terms, demand and supply tension is created when you do lead generation really well.
If there was a silver bullet to save and build a profitable business and allow you to be more confident, I think that silver bullet has to be to generate more leads. If we had more leads, then we would have more decisions to make. We would find the proper fit. We'd feel more relaxed in the conversation. So it felt really natural that my next guest, the returning champion, Daniel Priestley, is here. He's, of course, the author of Scorecard Marketing, Key Person of Influence, and Oversubscribed. Happy to have Daniel back. In the conversation, the context for our audience is that I put out a tweet or an X, I don't know how you say that now, that this year I want to focus on leads and helping our community generate more leads. Immediately, Daniel slips me a DM, says, Chris, let's do this. I have an idea. So here we go. Daniel, take it away. What are we going to do?
I mean, this is my passion. I absolutely adore lead generation as a topic. My first mentor when I was 19 years old was this guy called John. I happened to be employee number 3 in his company when he had no bank account, no business name, and he was just getting started. So we're sitting around the kitchen table. 2 years later, we've got 60 people in an inner city office. We got millions and millions of revenue. And I had actually witnessed the entire growth journey of that agency just go boom. And his mantra was everything is downstream from lead generation. If you can't master lead generation, then it doesn't matter how good you are. And on the flip side, you could master lead generation and you'll be able to fix everything else. So if you've got hundreds of leads coming in, you're going to be able to make sales. You're going to be able to pick and choose the best clients. You're going to be able to recruit amazing people. You're going to be able to get investors if you need investors. Everything just kind of magically happens after the lead generation. And as a thought experiment, I always ask people, if Kim Kardashian decided to get into your business, into your industry, and she wanted to come in and compete with you and she'd launch today, like how much money would she make in the next 12 months? Probably like $100 million because she's got a big audience. She would have to just ask that audience to signal intent and then she could pick and choose the clients and away you go. So this idea of lead generation is so fundamental to the success and we pretend that it doesn't exist. It's like we forget about gravity and yet gravity is pretty fundamental to everything we do.
I was a little scared when you set up the Kim Kardashian model because not only would she generate hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue, but it'd probably wipe you out.
Yeah, it just caused such a, you know, everything would happen in the wake. The fundamentals of entrepreneurship, if you think about just the basics of economics, the first lesson in economics is that demand and supply is everything. Demand and supply sets the price. And if you go back to Adam Smith, Wealth of Nations, his first example is this example of why is water for free and diamonds cost a lot of money. And he basically says water is everything. You can't live without water. It's the most valuable substance theoretically on the planet. And yet because there's plenty of supply, we don't value it very highly. And because essentially we don't feel that it's running out. So the demand and supply curve is stacked in the favor that there's plenty of supply and not, you know, not an excess of demand. But on the flip side, in the book, he talks about diamonds and he says, even though not many people are interested in diamonds, that relative to the demand, there's less of them. So we have not many diamonds and a lot more people who want them. So he talks about the fact that that pushes the price up. I think business is incredibly unfair. It's so unfair when you start looking at what businesses are profitable and what businesses aren't profitable. There's no rules of fairness at play. So if you were to say what business should be profitable, you would definitely say that an airline should be profitable because it's such a fundamental business and also it's so hard to run, such an incredibly difficult business. Everything has to go perfect all the time and yet they have 3 to 7% margin. You would say your supermarket chains that provide the food for the local area, they should be profitable. They have 3 to 5% margins. And then you take something stupid and frivolous like a Rolex watch, and that has a 75% margin. And it's like, well, wait a second, this thing isn't even like essential and you don't need one and no one, it's not urgent. And it's like, well, what's going on? What is going on? And what it is that Rolex understands demand and supply tension And supermarkets, they just supply, and airlines, they just supply. They don't create any tension around the supply. So the first thing I always say to people is you've got to get rid of this idea of fairness that if you're doing a good job, you get paid really well. It's not. It's if you're able to create demand and supply tension, you get paid really well. So in practical terms, demand and supply tension is created when you do lead generation really well.
Okay. In case you're not familiar with these terms like demand and supply tension, it just means that if there are more people who want what you make and there's fewer supply of the things that you make, then you're on the right side of that. Conversely, if you're sitting around twiddling your thumbs and no one's calling, no one's emailing you, there are no prospects, there's no calls scheduled, you have a lot of supply and almost no demand at that point. And that's where I think some of our audience is going to find themselves square. So I think what we're going to do today, it's a little bit different than the way we normally structure our conversations, Daniel. We're going to do a deep dive, everybody. We're going to lay out the roadmap. We're going to go step by step. So look, tune out right now if you have too many clients or if you have too much money in your bank account, if your runway is too big or you're just like, oh, I don't know what $35,000 or $200,000 job to take. It's just so many options to consider and you're overwhelmed by choice. Stop right now. Go watch another video. But if not, what I would suggest you do is you cozy up, you get your notepad out because we're going to go really, really deep. And Daniel's going to walk us through everything that you need to do in the most simplest, easy to understand, and easy to apply way, such that by finishing this video, and if you actually take action on it, you're going to start to move yourself in the correct direction. Is that fair, Daniel?
Absolutely. Yeah, step by step. We're going to go through it step by step. And okay, so where should I start? Should I get straight into tactics or should I use some examples of when people do this really well?
Let's go with an example first. Let's hook them with the story and then let's break it down afterwards.
So the story here in the UK is there's this music festival called Glastonbury Music Festival. And this is the most profitable and successful music festival in the world. And pretty much everyone all over the world, like Coachella and Glastonbury would be the two biggest kind of music festivals you could go to. So the way it works for getting a ticket to Glastonbury is that you cannot actually buy a ticket to Glastonbury. You can only register your interest. You can join the waiting list to get the ticket. So you fill in a registration of interest form. And the way they do this is they get 700,000 people to fill in the registration of interest form. And then for 30 minutes of the year, right? Imagine that. Like, isn't that incredible? 365 days of the year, tickets are available for 30 minutes. They email everyone and they say, there's 700,000 people on the waiting list. There's 130,000 tickets available. They go live at 5 a.m. tomorrow morning. And everyone sets an alarm. They get up early. They book their ticket to Glastonbury. They hover their little finger over the mouse, right, over the buy button, and they just pray. They're just hoping they get those tickets. And they're elated when they get the opportunity to buy the tickets. Crazy thing is they don't even release the bands. They don't tell you who's going to be playing. You buy the tickets blind. And then if you don't like the bands, you can resell them. And there's like a 7-minute window for people to get their hands on the resale tickets. It's this process that they've mastered. So what they're doing is they're doing a different type of campaign that's opposite to most businesses. Rather than making something available, they're saying it's not available, but you can register, you can signal interest. So they're not doing sales, they're doing signals. So they're promoting for signals, not for sales. Now, this is a game changer when it's applied to like an agency, for example. You can't buy from us, you can signal you're interested, and then we will then talk to you, but we do the signals of interest first. So you're essentially getting people to do that. The other thing that they do beautifully is transparency. So transparency is where you tell people what's the imbalance of demand and supply. So when they say there's 700,000 people interested and only 130,000 tickets, you know, oh, there's five people for every person who wants a ticket. There's five people who want it. So there's this feeling, this tension is in the air, the electricity is there. So they're creating the theater and the experience of will I or won't I get this? So by marketing for signals first, then they can easily make the sales for a year in 30 minutes, right? So that's what we're trying to do. We're doing this signal collection campaign. So the two main ways of doing this that I find really, really powerful is number one is waiting lists and registration of interest lists. And number two is what's called a pre-sale assessment, an online scorecard, an online quiz, an online assessment. And these are two really powerful ways that people can signal intent without having to commit. And then you can collect way more signals than you need in order to be fully subscribed. And then you can create the imbalance.
Okay. That's an excellent example. And I've seen video concert footage of the festival that you're speaking of, and there's some banger headliners, and you're like, of course people want this, because you're never going to be able to get in this opportunity again. And once the tickets are sold out, buying them in the aftermarket is probably murder. The price is going to be ridiculously higher than it would be if you bought them at quote unquote retail. But I'm going to imagine that most of our audience are in this place. So yeah, if you're a headliner act and you've got access to this, easy for you to create that supply and demand tension. But I create logos. I build websites. I do things that I feel like there's an infinite number of options and alternatives to me. How do I create this kind of demand that you're talking about? So if they signal intent or ask for people to signal intent to buy, why would anybody sign up for that?
Well, the reason is that in order for somebody to buy, they have to be about 90% sure that they want to buy something. And when someone buys something and they're 90% sure and then it doesn't quite live up, they have buyer's remorse. But essentially, the whole process revolves around them being at least 90% sure they want to buy something. For someone to signal interest, they only have to be about 10 or 20% sure they want to buy something. So let's say that I'm interested in doing a company rebrand. If I'm 90% sure that I want to do a company rebrand, I might go to an agency and talk to them and all of that sort of stuff. If I was only 10 or 20% thinking about doing a company rebrand, I might fill in an online assessment called, would you get value from a rebrand? Should you rebrand your company? Answer these 12 questions to find out whether rebranding your company is a good idea or a bad idea. Is your brand powerful enough? Answer these 20 questions and find out if you've got a powerful brand or not. So by filling in the assessment, I only need to be very early in the sales journey to fill in the assessment. Now, once I do fill in the assessment, we can then warm the sale up. We can warm people up. Now, the other cool thing is you can say, hey, look, each year I have capacity to take on between 30 and 40 clients. That's it. I don't have infinite capacity to do this for everyone. I have 30 to 40 clients, and we have 400, 500 people who filled in the assessment. So we're always very choosy as to who we work with. So now you can reveal the demand and supply tension. You can say, we've got 40 clients that we can work with in a year. We've got 300-400 people who have filled in the assessment. We pick and choose. Can we interview you to see whether you'd be suitable to be one of our clients? So this kind of reverses the stakes.
Okay, so you're using both concepts here. You're using the concept of transparency and communicating to people the limited supply. And we all have limited supply. We just don't think about it. We think we can take on an infinite number of clients, but let's face it, if a million clients knocked on your door tomorrow, you could probably service two or three without going crazy. It's not infinitely scalable.
Especially when you think about doing a great job. You might have an infinite ability to do a crappy job, but you probably don't have an infinite ability to deliver a really high-end experience. So especially when you create capacity, you create the capacity around doing a job properly. Okay, so let's start with this idea. First principles, why would someone be paying a really high amount of money for rebranding and social media assets and all of that sort of stuff? So there's a couple of reasons why they would do that. The primary reason is that they can get a return on investment. They're the type of company that can actually, they see the value in it. They can say, hey, for me, if I spend 50 grand, I'm going to make 500 grand, right? There's value in this. I'm going to sell my company for more money. I'm going to be a market leader. I'm going to build brand equity. I'm going to charge a premium price. All of those things, they see the value in it. Now, the truth is that the companies that see value in something, they're at the top of the pyramid, and the pyramid might have 100 companies, and a tiny percentage of companies see the value in stuff. So, you know, you might deal with a startup that has no budget and they're just like, yeah, we definitely would not spend 50 grand on our logo or whatever. But then you get a company that's a family business, third generation, new kids have come in and they want to put their stamp of approval on it. They want to like make it their own and they've always wanted to rebrand it. They're just like 50 grand's nothing. We're totally seed value. So the first thing is that we've got to understand that buyers kind of organize themselves into hierarchies. And unless you assemble a pyramid, you can't really assess who's at the top of the pyramid, right? So what do you end up doing? You end up catering to the base of the pyramid, and the base of the pyramid pay the lowest price. So you've got to make sure that if you're just processing people one at a time, you're just probably going to charge the lowest price. So by what we're trying to do is clump people up into a pyramid first, assess using data, who are the people who are going to see the most value in what I do, ignore the bottom of the pyramid and only talk to the people at the top of the pyramid. That's one of the first things that we want to do. And then the other reason that people are going to pay that is because they feel that market forces dictate it. They feel that there is some sort of market force that dictates that they have to pay that. So if I do have a £50,000 budget for a logo, $50,000 budget for a logo. Sorry, I'm in the UK, so I say pounds. I'm not talking about how much they weigh. I'm talking about the money, right? So if they have a $50,000 budget for a logo, they might say, well, market forces don't dictate that I have to pay that. I just want to pay $5,000 because I don't see any reason why. So we need to have, number one, the ability to justify the value. And number two, that the market forces are saying that that's how much you have to pay. So by doing this ridiculous dance that I'm going to recommend, do this ridiculous game of getting people to signal first, you create a pyramid, you get to talk, because of the data, you get to talk to the top of the pyramid who can justify the value. And secondly, you've got the base of the pyramid that creates the market force as to, well, hey, we've got hundreds of people who want to work with us and we can only work with so many people each year. So it creates market forces. So what we're trying to do is solve those two problems.
Okay. Quick recap here is you're saying all buyers are not created equally. There's a hierarchy to them. What we want to do is we want to divide them up into different categories, or another word to say that is to segment them. So the ones who see the most value in what you do, they already know who they are. They're like, take my money. That's who they are. They're hungry for a solution. They had the means to do it. At the very bottom of that hierarchy are people who are like, I'm not so sure this is a good investment. I don't have the money. They're a startup. Maybe they're self-funded or part of like a nonprofit that doesn't have any money or budget allocated towards doing this work. So we need to quickly segment them to see who we need to serve. So far, I'm on board.
Nice. Okay, so how do we do that? Let's get into the how-to. So the most simple way, the most basic way, and we're going to go for a basic strategy and an advanced strategy. The basic strategy is called a waiting list or a pre-registration of interest list. And what you want to do is you want to promote the waiting list with the same level of fervor that you would promote your actual product. You want to be out there speaking on stages. And when you're on stage and you say, hey, there's an opportunity to work with me, but you have to join the waiting list or you have to join the registry. You have to do a registration of interest form. You're really pushing like that as the main thing. That's the only step that people can take. So you're presenting to people that filling in a registration of interest or filling in a waiting list is the key thing. That's the main call to action. You might do that on social media. You might have that as a key step on the website. Now, the difference between the two is a waiting list for future capacity and a registration of interest list is to register for current capacity. So for example, if I was launching a new service at the end of the year, I might say, hey, we're going to be launching a new social media marketing service. It's not ready yet. It's ready in the future. Join the waiting list for that. So I could have that 6 months or 9 months into the future. It's coming. It could be next year that it's coming. And it could be 12 months into the future, but I can promote the waiting list in the buildup to that new service being available. So a waiting list is always something that's coming in the future. It's not available now and it's going to be, so you better join the waiting list. And that's so powerful. I mean, that's really powerful. You might even say to people, we typically have to book clients 3 or 6 months in advance because of the quality of the work that we're focused on right now. We don't have capacity to take people on in the short term. You can join the waiting list for our Q2, Q3 intake, right? So that would be how you would use a waiting list. Registration of interest list is similar, but it just implies that actually we could work together sooner, but you do need to go through a registration of interest page first. So for example, I've got a friend of mine who is a professional speaker, and he used to promote himself as a professional speaker and say, book me as a professional speaker, download my rate cards, download my speaking keynotes and all this sort of stuff. And he exchanged that, a slight tweak, and he just simply said, I've got a registration of interest. If you've got a conference coming up, register your interest. We'll then get back to you. And when you go through the registration of interest, he asks questions like, how many people will be attending? Is it free tickets or paid tickets? Do you want books or no books? Is it a keynote or a workshop? Keynotes are typically an hour. Workshops are 3 hours. So he goes through and asks all these questions. And he asks them questions like, are there sponsorship opportunities available at your event? Would you like me to suggest some of my sponsors I've previously worked with? So he's getting all this information. And then when he goes back to them, he has this very clear picture as to what kind of event. Is it a first-time event or a regular event that has been run in the past? All of this information. And when he comes in, he can then say, look, based on my availability, I can do about 80 speaking engagements per year. And he's able to actually build the demand and supply tension through that registration of interest form. So he's getting people to reveal a lot about what they're looking for prior to having that conversation.
Wonderful. Okay, first, let me just sum it up in the real world here. I like to buy, I guess people would call them action figures. They're quite expensive. They're $200 figurines, artfully done, sculpted. And there's one company in particular, they're called Underverse. It's an Australian artist. And he's like, okay, in this day, in this date, a limited number of figures will be released. And he, I think he says 200. And oftentimes they sell out almost immediately, depending on how desirable that particular action figure is. So I'm constantly like, oh my God, 8:04 a.m., whatever day I set an alarm. I'm doing exactly what you're saying. So in the real world, this works. And then I show up and I'm like, oh, I got to get through the credit card processing thing so I can buy this thing. And I'm so relieved. Like you said, there's joy in me getting this thing. Like, okay, cool. He hasn't even made it yet. They're just prototypes.
Amazing. That is perfect, right? You're buying something that before it's even made. Is there, out of curiosity in that process, is there any transparency that you can see that other people are interested in this capacity?
Yes, in a way, because they're posted on social media. The artist I'm talking about, his name is Ashley Wood. And you can see like 10,000 people have liked this. And they're like, uh-oh, there's only 200 figures. Now, not everybody who likes the post is going to be buying it, but it's like, and then you can see other figures where there might have 2,000 people or 100 people liking it. So you can tell, we, the public, like this a lot, or we don't like it as much.
So those are the market forces that I'm talking about. So there's the justification return on investment. So for you, you can justify this habit because relative to your income, it's affordable. And also, you like to have beautifully designed things in your space. And they, you know, you can also probably run it through the business because you're in a design studio scenario. So you could, for you, it might be tax deductible. For someone else, it might not be tax deductible. So just that creates justification. But then the second part is market forces. So the funny thing is that for you as a buyer, you're on the top of the pyramid, whether you know it or not, because you can afford it, right? So you're just one of those top of the pyramid. There's probably, out of those 10,000 people who are liking the post, there's probably a bunch of kids that don't even have a credit card. But that's creating the market forces that I'm talking about that are heightening your experience of like, ooh, I'm not the only one. I can see it on social media. Boom. So those two elements are coming into play beautifully.
Yeah. And there's this thing that we've learned that when there's a drop and you missed a drop, there's this horrible feeling of missing out, especially for someone like me. And you're right. I know this is not an appropriate term, but I'm like the wet dream for all marketers because I am so ready to buy. I will subscribe to everything that you tell me about because I'm eagerly looking for cool things to acquire because, you know, I'm a hoarder. Let's just say that. Okay. Now, here's the other concept.
A hoarder of beautifully designed things, yeah.
Probably gonna get canceled for saying that. Okay, here's the other thing I noticed. Sometimes I'm late to it, and I go and like, there's a cool sneaker drop. I'm like, oh, shoot, I didn't even know this designer existed. This collaboration happened. I'm not following it that actively. And so I notice, oh, my size, it's out. So then they say, notify me when available. I think that's the second concept you were talking about, right?
The registration of interest.
Right. So it's not a future product that's going to drop. It's already one that exists, but there's finite supply. And if we can apply this to our own business, and I wanted to get your brain in on this. So I say, okay, notify me when available. And I'm always like, gosh darn it, I know it's not going to be available, but I always hit that button, okay. And every once in a while, to my surprise, to my delight, that Chris, you know that thing that you want? I'm like, yeah, it's available now. And actually it's at a discounted price. I'm like, take my money. Just take it right now. I'm ready to go. How does one apply that principle in the design space?
Well, let's say you had a design workshop that you do with clients and where you go in and do a workshop in their offices and all of that sort of stuff. You could actually say, these are currently not available. Notify me when these are available. You could say, there are no dates available for this in the next 3 months. Please notify me when this becomes available again, when there are dates available. So those types of things. One of the keys around this notification process and waiting list process is that you must not just collect the data of contact information. You've got to ask at least 5 or 6 questions to really understand where they fit, right? The segmentation questions. So you might ask questions like, how many years has this business been in? You know, is it a traditional brand? Has it been around for a while? You might ask questions around, does this business have a dedicated marketing team? Would you describe yourself as a startup? Would you describe yourself as a fast growth company? Would you describe yourself as an established business? Right. So you can ask these kind of questions. You can ask some questions that help them to understand themselves a little bit better. You know, would you describe your brand as traditional or modern and, you know, those kind of things. But as soon as you start collecting that information, what you've actually done is begun the process of people like mentally adopting the solution and wanting it to be available. Now they've filled that information. They want that available. So the data that you collect is just as important.
I want to run it by you, Daniel, and it's going to maybe prompt another idea here. The question I would ask is, does your current identity reflect your own personal values? Does your identity impact your business in significant ways? Because now I'm like, I want to see who the very top are, the people who have good taste, who feel like there's a misalignment between their values or their future vision. And it's, I want to see if they have a real problem and if they're urgent for that solution. What do you think about those kinds of questions?
Oh, I love that. And sometimes you might even just ask them, what's the problem with your current situation? What problem are you trying to solve? You know, positioning for luxury or being seen as more relevant or entering a new market or repositioning for a younger audience or other, please tell us what kind of solution are you, what sort of problem are you? So people, it tends to be that customers tend to think in terms of their problem or their solution thereafter. So they can say, I'm trying to achieve this, or I'm frustrated because this currently is going on. So you kind of want to throw out some questions that allow them to think in those terms that they're already thinking.
Right. And another way of thinking about that is my wife was telling me about this, that there are only two true emotions. It's fear and love. So maybe you love a new audience or you want to serve in a different way and you feel a calling and you need to reposition, or you found something, a new passion of yours. And so therefore you're launching a new product. And so there, that would lead you to wanting to create something, or you're afraid of what's happening over here. You're afraid of missing out on the AI revolution or what's happening with social media or the attention economy. And you're caught off guard or you're behind the curve, if you will. So you can play on those two and you can play on them both simultaneously. It doesn't have to be one or the other.
The carrot and the stick. Yeah, exactly. So that's essentially, that's the waiting list. That's the registration of interest list. And the goal is that you can then somehow add transparency. So there's a few things you can do to add transparency. You can either just simply tell people we have capacity of 20 clients per year and we have 200 people on that list. Or you can say to people, we can't take you on just yet, but if you'd like to join our WhatsApp discussion group, you can join the WhatsApp discussion group, which is available. Now that WhatsApp discussion group might have 1,200 businesses in it discussing ideas. And then suddenly that person goes, oh man, there's 1,200 people in here. What if I miss out? What if I don't get a chance to work with this person? So there are things you can do to add this layer of transparency that exist to create demand and supply tension. So putting people into a group creates it. Inviting people to an event where you know that there's going to be plenty of people there is very, very powerful. So like if you're a sponsor of an event, you know there's going to be 200 people, you can say, even though we can't take you on at the moment, we're sponsoring this event. We'd love to invite you, give you a ticket as our guest. Suddenly people start to see, oh, wow, okay, this person is quite in demand. So some sort of I'm in demand transparency needs to happen next. Once that demand and supply tension is created, then you can then have the conversation with the client and then make a time that you can, you know, take them on as a client. You can revealing your higher price in the context of that lead up is really powerful. Right, that's so powerful because, you know, I joined the waiting list. I saw that you run a group of 1,000 people. I saw that you're running an event with 200 people there, and now I'm having a chat. And now I'm hearing that you offer something at a higher price. Okay, great. It all makes sense. It all stacks up that this has got market forces behind it. So that would be way number one. That's the kind of basic strategy, the waiting list or the registration of interest. The more advanced strategy is called the assessment, the scorecard or the assessment. This is a really powerful strategy. So an assessment is essentially where you sell the assessment rather than the solution. You refuse to talk solution until people have gone through an assessment process. If you go to the doctor is not going to say, okay, hey, Chris, I've just had a glance at you and I think I'm going to put your arm in a cast for 6 weeks. That's not going to happen. The doctor says, what's wrong? And you say, oh, I've got this problem with my arm. Okay, let me send you away for an x-ray. Okay, now I've got the results of the x-ray. I can show you that's the problem there. You've got a fracture here and we're going to have to put that in a cast for 6 weeks. Because the doctor sells the assessment first and they can then demonstrate, like, look, we did the assessment. Here's what's going on. You then say, okay, well, I will put my arm in a cast for 6 weeks if I have to. It makes sense because I did the assessment. That revealed the problem. And now, okay, fair enough. So an assessment in a business context is often a quiz or a questionnaire that people fill in. Often it's 30 to 40 questions. And people then go through and they're objectively answering questions about themselves, their business, their hopes, dreams, problems, all of that sort of stuff. There might be categories in that assessment. So it could be brand identity, brand philosophy, brand ambassadors, duplicating and replicating the brand. Or you might have these kind of key categories that you have, and you go through and you do the assessment, and then you discuss the results of the assessment. You say, oh, okay, as it turns out, you really like the brand identity, but actually you're having an issue with discovering or discussing the brand philosophy and finding the right brand ambassadors to go with that brand identity. Okay, that makes sense. Well, let's not touch the identity too much. Let's go and do this work on the intangibles, and let's see if we can identify some brand ambassadors that would be suitable, and let's bring them on board. So now you're having a conversation about the results of the assessment. And that is so powerful. So this is called assessment-based selling. And it's just one of the most powerful things. The beauty of this is that not only does it create a very perfect fit between what you offer and what the client wants, going through the process of doing the assessment and knowing that the assessment is available for anyone else to do, right? If you promote that assessment, you can see that hundreds of companies fill in that assessment every single month. It creates the market force and it creates the demand and supply tension that people respond well to.
It's time for a quick break, but we'll be right back. In the world of social media, connection is everything. Content creators, influencers, designers, and all types of brands and entrepreneurs need to engage with their audience and share their online identity. The best way to do that is with a .bio domain name. A .bio domain name lets your audience know where they can find your work, check out your content, or hear your latest music, host your online portfolio, show yourself as a thought leader, or use it in your LinkedIn bio page to manage all your links in one spot on a custom domain name that people will recognize. Short, memorable, and professional, your .bio domain is the best way to share yourself with the world. Instead of a long Linktree URL that nobody will understand, using your .bio domain for your LinkedIn bio page lets you manage all your links in one spot with a custom domain name that tells people exactly who you are. Head over to porkbun.com/TLD/bio right now to get a .bio domain name for less than $3.
When I started my motion design company Blind in 95, there was a lot I didn't know, so I tried reaching out to other business owners and professionals for help. What did I find? Many saw me as competition, and those who didn't weren't able to give advice that made sense for my line of work. Thankfully, I was able to find my first and only business coach, Kieran McLaren, who mentored me for 13 years. I also learned that my story isn't unique. Many entrepreneurs feel like they're left to figure everything out on their own. It's why I created the Future Pro membership, a community I wish I had when I first started. And I'd like to invite you to check out all that we have waiting for you inside at thefuture.com/pro.
And we're back. Welcome back to our conversation.
There's an expression, I think I heard it first from Mr. Blair Enns. He said something like, prescription without diagnosis is malpractice. And I think we can get our head wrapped around that, right? So we're going to go and operate. You need to eat these pills. And all of a sudden you get really sick or it actually gets worse. There's a lawsuit in your future because the doctor did not do his or her due diligence and just started to prescribe things to you that weren't helpful to you at all. You said something about selling the assessment. So I can hear that in two different ways. One is the idea. So figuratively, sell the assessment, shift away from the solution. Or literally sell the assessment, and we do this all the time, to get an appraisal for complex things, we actually have to pay for it. And if the assessment is really good, because the x-ray doesn't come for free, the blood work is not for free, and if it's really good and it gives us peace of mind, then it's actually worth something. You could decide to charge zero, or you can charge whatever you think the market will bear in terms of like the value that you're creating for people, but it needs to be just as good. Am I getting that part right?
Absolutely. You can even have two assessments. You could have a light version that's free. It's on the website. It's in conjunction with when you're speaking at an event. You can do these on stage where you put up a QR code. Everyone brings up their phone. They then answer the quiz questions, and then they get their score right there on the while they're sitting in your workshop. And that could be a light version, or you could actually do quite a high-end assessment. We have clients who charge $5,000 to $10,000 to do an assessment with a corporate and then present it as a workshop back to the corporate. And it's kind of like it involves fact-finding from the team and from the customer base and all this sort of stuff. And they charge $5,000 to $10,000 just to do the assessment. And bigger corporates actually love that. It gives them peace of mind.
One thing I try to emphasize to people that are in the creative services space that are running a business looking for clients, you're looking for anything that you can do that creates difference between you and the next person, that puts you in a position of perceived value or expertise. These are good things. So whether you charge money for it or not, just by getting the client's degree to do an assessment, it says, this person is really not rushing into giving me a solution. They care to know a little bit more about me. And especially if the results of the assessment are enlightening or insightful, there's these aha moments in it that I didn't realize about myself, this becomes even more valuable. And you're also filtering out clients who are unwilling to sit down and spend the amount of time to reflect on what it is that they want to do, to define their goals or their motivations. And so you might be just getting rid of a lot of people who are really poor fits for you. I can see many benefits from this: psychological, marketing, positioning, filtering out clients, and also generating leads.
I'll tell you a real life story too, where this kind of differentiated me. My wife saw a tweet from a very big influencer who had 15 million followers and did this tweet and said, I'm looking for a business coach, business advisor to help me, you know, with my business. Anyone who's a business coach or advisor, let me know what you do. And my wife responded and said, oh, my husband could help you with this, right? So, and she actually did the research, got in touch with the influencer's girlfriend and said, oh, you're my husband, right? It's interesting. So I got through to this kind of like final few people. And my pitch was, I don't know if you need me as a business coach or not, but take this assessment I created called 24 Assets, answer these 48 questions, and then I'll tell you whether you need me or not, or whether I can recommend someone. So they ended up signing up for me, a huge contract, and I did amazing work with them for over 12 months. And still friends, really great friends to this day. It's a lovely, lovely client. But when I asked later on down the track, hey, how come you picked me out of all the people who would have applied? He said, oh, because everyone else was just telling us about like what an amazing coach they are and who they've worked with in the past and all this sort of stuff. You didn't do any of that. You just basically got us to take this assessment. When we did the assessment, we realized that we had all these problems and we figured we better go with you because you were the one who told us about the problems that we didn't even know we had. So classic example.
Wonderful. Now, before we get into the nuts and bolts of building out an assessment quiz, I'm curious because I've seen you speak before many times. We're like long traveling buddies at this point, where I see Daniel Priestley across the globe everywhere I go, it seems like. And I had heard you at one of your events and somebody was raising their hand. This is just them volunteering, not that it was set up. They're like, oh my God, I went from this many leads to this many leads and this has transformed my business. Without disclosing the exact nature of the business or the person, can you share something that our audience might find more relatable than, say, one of the world's most successful music festivals? Can we bring it down to like somebody does something relatively boring, relatively undifferentiated with a lot of competition? Were they able to implement what you're talking about and having results?
Yeah, so there's an agency here in the UK called Robot Mascot, and they help startups to gain funding and to put together their pitch deck and their branding. So they actually do branding, like early stage branding. They do pitch deck, essentially take someone's ideas and they make it look like a much more established business ready for raising investment. And typically they work with companies that are raising $500,000 to $1.5 million. They've really carved out this space. He's written a book called Investable Entrepreneur. So you get the picture. But the big game change there was when he launched the Pitch Ready Scorecard. So are you ready to pitch investors? Take the Pitch Ready Scorecard. And that Pitch Ready Scorecard, it actually, I think you answer about 25 different questions. And it highlights all the weaknesses in your pitch and your business ready for presentation. And it gives you a PDF that says, hey, here's what you need to do. And then they get in touch and they say, thanks for filling in this. We can't work with you straight away, but let us put a book in the mail so that you can have a read of the book, Investable Entrepreneur, and we'll come back to you as soon as we've got some availability. And they typically come back in a week or so and say, hey, look, we've sent you the book. We've got limited availability, but when are you thinking of doing your raise? And people say, oh, well, I'm trying to do it in the next 3 months. Okay, well, you know, let us talk through the packages and and discuss whether we've got some availability for you. We've got to figure out whether you need a little bit or a lot of work. So let's have a look at your assessment. They go through, look at the questions, and they say, okay, here's what we would need to do with you to get you ready in time. So then suddenly it's like, oh, wow, I might get through. So it's a really great process. But rather than saying, hey, you need this thing, they say, take the pitch ready scorecard and then we'll see if you need this thing.
Wow. Okay. That's a really good example. And it gave me an idea. So everybody who's listening to this, if you're thinking about how do I apply these principles, I want to, you just take a moment, just maybe hit pause on the recording here. Just kind of think it through. And I'm going to just give you a prompt. What is one thing that you've heard thus far that you could apply today or in the next couple of days that would start to move you in the right direction? Just think about that for a second. And then when you figure out what that thing is, write down a couple of steps. In order for that to happen, I need to do X, Y, and Z. So just make a numbered list, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So what are the next 5 steps in order for me to do this thing? And you want to focus on the things that you can do today or tomorrow, not weeks or months from now. Okay, and I'll do this maybe one more time before this episode wraps so that you can really think it through. Because oftentimes we consume too much information, we get really inspired, and then we don't do anything. And I know Daniel's going to reveal more, so it's going to get even more interesting here. But you gave me an idea just in this conversation. This is not premeditated, everybody. Are you ready for your next fill in the blank? So if I want to sell sales coaching, I want to say, are you ready for your next new business call? Take this assessment, 25 questions to see where you might be messing up. It could be tone of voice. It could be the offer. It could be the structure or the outline, the kinds of questions that you're asking so that the person who takes the assessment doesn't need to do anything more with me, but at least they're walking away with real value. Say, shoot, if I tried this, you just made me aware of something that I was kind of blind to. And if I can improve that on the next call, all of a sudden, even if we haven't done anything, I know that you're a person of real value and that you know what you're doing. So just use that as a prompt. Are you ready for your next pitch meeting?
Are you ready to blank? Yeah.
Yeah. Are you ready for blank? For your next blank? Okay.
But these are spot on. So the most successful scorecards are readiness scorecards, readiness assessments. And it could be, are you ready for a rebrand? Are you ready for a new logo? Are you ready to sign a brand ambassador deal? Are you ready to bring on a brand ambassador? Are you ready to expand into new markets? So it's kind of like you get into the head of your typical customer and you think, what is it they want, right? They want this thing and they're wondering, am I ready for this thing? Like it's a pre-flight checklist. It's kind of like, are you ready to take off? Here's the things that you have to do on the pre-flight checklist. So it gives people that experience of like, oh, am I ready for this thing that I want? Are you destined for a fail is another one. Like, are you going to get disrupted by AI? Are you on track to be put out of business by a competitor? Are you becoming less relevant? Is your brand dissolving into irrelevance? Answer these questions to find out. So that one, you know, can be quite confronting, but it also can work. The other one that works if you put a lot of creativity into it is what's called a type scorecard, a type assessment. Which type of salesperson are you? Which type of agency are you? Which market does your brand naturally fit with? Are you a mass market brand or a niche brand? Are you a luxury or a open brand, right? So you can ask people, which type are you? So these type quizzes are really, people love this stuff. Are you an introvert or an extrovert? Are you a fisher or a farmer? Disney princess are you, right? So people just love these kind of, these which type are you? So the readiness is the easy one. Are you ready to blank? And which type are you? These are great scorecards that people love to fill in.
You know what? I never thought of it this way before. But the type assessment is something that is very popular under a different label. People go to fortune tellers, maybe astrologists, if I'm saying that correctly. They want to do your FIDO assessment or FIDO assessment, the Myers-Briggs personality test. We are in search of like who we are. And so naturally, the market already wants this. So if you think like, yeah, have you ever been curious about who you are, palm reading? Reading your tea leaves, all kinds of stuff. Almost every single culture on earth has something like this, horoscopes, things that tell you a little bit about who you are. And there are more science-based ones, like maybe 23andMe. We just want to know, what percentage of Irish or Mexican are you? Okay, let's figure this thing out. So people love that kind of stuff, especially if you, and you said it requires a lot of creativity, probably some work to put this together. But if you put in the work once, then it could pay dividends for a really long time.
Well, that happened for me. I created something called the Key Person of Influence Scorecard around personal brand. And it's, are you ready to position yourself as a key person of influence? And that lasted, or it has lasted so far, for 7 years. And I think we're up to something like 120,000 people have taken that scorecard. It's wild. So people want that mirror. They want to, like, why do we look in the mirror? Like, we know what we look like, but we look in the mirror because we want to check in. So people love to do these little check-ins to reflect back an insight about themselves. So people absolutely love, are you ready? And which type are you? Totally, totally awesome. So that information needs to go onto a landing page. So the first thing is, you've got to have a landing page that sells it. On that landing page, you're going to really sell yourself as an expert or an authority. You're probably going to have some case studies or testimonials that don't necessarily relate to the core service that you offer, but relate to the value of taking the quiz. So rather than having Christo thinks that our services are really amazing because he did a $50,000 rebrand with us, it's Christo thinks this assessment is really amazing because it gave him a great insight. So you want to just sell that next step. Have people give the testimonial for that assessment. Get 3 or 4 people to take it. And then what did you learn from it? And have those comments on the landing page. So that when someone looks at the landing page, they're like, oh, I want to take this assessment. This looks really cool. This is telling me what I'm going to be scored on. This is going to give me insights about this, this, and this. So it's all there presented beautifully on the landing page. Then the second part of this is the quiz questions. So people answer yes, no, or they answer sliding scale, one on a scale of 1 to 10, or multiple choices. So they do the quiz questions, they go through, and then there's the quiz logic behind this, and then it reveals on the results page. The results page basically says, here's your result, and here's some content that relates specifically to you. This is where you get to, because you scored 89% on this, we think this. Because you scored 14% on this area, this is what you need to be doing next, right? So it tells you a bit about the result. So you've got a landing page, you've got the questionnaire, and then you've got the results page. And that is essentially the entire blueprint of how these things get set up.
Okay. So you're putting up a landing page, you're building some authority or social proof with people who have taken it before, because you're removing resistance of like, I don't want to take a stupid quiz, it's going to take too long. And so like, wow, okay, these are insights, great. And now they can take the actual quiz and then come up with their own conclusion. And when the results page pop up, this is where I love this part so much, because I get asked this all the time. What book should I be reading? What videos should I watch? And if I, well, for me to tell you that, I have to have a whole dialogue with you, not scalable. So if I sat down and actually worked through the quiz, then I can link all the books and the videos, some free things, some things that are paid. And what you do with that is up to you, but that sounds like something that I can get behind. It doesn't feel icky at all. I've asked you to take a quiz. I've given you resources. I've saved a lot of my time.
Yeah, it's a bit of a triage.
Right? Yes. I spent a week doing it at most. And then now for the years in which I don't have to answer these questions anymore, it's a beautiful thing. I just say, just go to that thing. I could pop up a QR code when I'm speaking. It's like, hey, if you have more questions, I have some resources, but it's going to be a guided thing. Take this. Cool.
Yeah, exactly. For you, I mean, for you, you've got hundreds of videos. So it's like, well, actually, I'm going to curate that into 4 different segment libraries, playlists. And it's like, well, answer these questions. And then here's the playlist for you. Super powerful. Now, these things used to take forever to do. It used to take like 6 weeks to put these together. And anyway, we built this into a very much a format, which is in that book, Scorecard Marketing. So you can use the free software that we created called Score App, and then essentially it just walks you through. You use our templates, or you use the AI wizard, and the AI writes 1,200 words for you and just basically pumps it all out, and you just edit it. It creates the sponge cake and you ice the cake. So it's pretty simple. But once you've got one of these assessments, you get out there and promote that assessment as hard as you would promote your core service.
Does the Score App build you that landing page, or do you use the Score App to build the quiz and you still build your landing page?
No, it's included in Score App is a landing page builder with templates. And like, you can either start from scratch if you know how to code, or you can use templates, or you can use AI. So there's a landing page builder. Then there's the questionnaire with all the logic, and it's all kind of like, it intuitively builds it with logic built in, but you can alter the logic. And then the results page is linked to the logic so that people see results based upon how they answered the quiz questions, and all of that kind of just happens, right? So our development team have just built this thing that just kind of just works. And yeah, it's free, right? So you can get a free account and you can generate 10 scorecards a month. And then if you want to do more, you pay a little bit more, and away you go. So it's a really nice, easy situation. You can also do waiting lists on it. Beautiful waiting lists, registration of interest lists.
Since you and I have been talking about ScoreApp, I think you recognize the shift in the marketplace and also looked at a tension point and have come up with a novel solution for it. Because as you can think, God, what kind of questions do I need to ask? How do I score these? And then what are the results? It sounds like a lot of work, and it is a lot of work. So I was really impressed when Daniel said, hey, Chris, you're going to like what we've been doing. I want to show you what we've been up to. And now you've integrated AI and GPTs into what it is that you're doing. And I've seen you demo this on stage live in front of a group of like a live audience. Within minutes, just poking around a little bit, you built a decent quiz, an assessment quiz. And I was like, that's really cool. So are you seeing a lot of people adopt the AI wizard and just help them make this?
Oh, yeah. Everyone starts with the AI wizard. And, you know, it's funny. People are very close to their own business. And one thing that strikes me as really shocking is that a lot of people they've been in their business so long that they can't empathize with people who don't know what it's like to not know. Like if you're an expert in branding, you just know so much about branding and you've forgotten what it's like to be completely clueless when it comes to this stuff. So you talk at a high level, and even when you think you're dumbing it down, you don't dumb it down anywhere near enough for your market. So the beauty of the AI wizard is you just tell the AI wizard what it is that you do, and then it writes it in plain English. It does all the work. It writes the quiz questions and all of that. So everyone tends to start with that. But pretty quickly, people want to bolt on different stuff to their landing page. They might want to add a timer countdown. They might want to add some PDF reports to download. So all of that's just there. You just add it all in. And then the third step, pretty much for most people, is that they fall in love with the whole thing and then they start using the templates and customize the templates because they really want to make something that's just like all singing, all dancing just for their business. So the AI is kind of like a good, easy, fast way to get started. And then, you know, you can carve out a day and do a really nice full design, you know, especially your audience. They just kind of like do an incredible job in a day or so. All the branding and the imagery and custom images and all that sort of stuff that you could put in. But it's all pretty damn easy. I love doing it in front of a live audience because no one believes that it's possible and it takes 6 minutes. Like the whole thing is built and the whole campaign is ready to roll in like 6 minutes, which you've seen, which blows people away.
Yeah. I'm saying this is not an exaggeration. The audience will audibly gasp and kind of like simultaneously be blown away and also scared to death. Cause like, oh my God, that was easy. And okay, we better get on this right now because look how easy that was to build.
And especially when the leads come in and the AI starts writing custom emails based upon the data and the segmentation, and it starts actually writing your follow-up campaigns for you. And when people see that, they're just like, what? Because it writes emails based on how everyone answered the quiz questions, and it cherry picks answers out of the quiz, and then it uses that in the follow-up. So it's almost like having a pretty damn good copywriter who just gets straight into writing a follow-up campaign based on the data, which is pretty wild. All of that's really good. Once you've got these leads flowing in, the final step is warming people up and making the sale. And you've now got people on the waiting list. You've got people who've taken the assessment. It's very, very important to do a few things, which is, I know it sounds cheesy or I don't know, some people don't like it, especially in the UK. But in some way, you have to signal that your capacity is limited. You have to go through the step of telling people, I don't have an unlimited capacity. And sometimes it's as simple as that. It's telling people, Chris, I just need to let you know, as much as I'd love to take you on as a client, I don't have unlimited capacity. And I'm really picky and selective about who I work with. Just simply sitting down and going through the assessment may not mean that we get a chance to work together in the future. Part of this process is me figuring out whether we'd be a good fit to work together. And in 2/3 of the cases, the answer is no, which is totally fine. I'm going to make a recommendation either way. And you need to turn the tables. You've got to flip it on people. And it's believable because you've got the online assessment and people can see that you use it at events and people take it on the website. They've seen some testimonials and case studies of how many people have taken it. It's believable that you can flip it on its head and you can say, I may not take you on as a client. I'm really protective of who I take on as a client. I only take people on if it's totally a great fit. The other thing that makes that really believable is if it's true, right? Then it's really believable because it's true. The best salespeople genuinely get themselves into a position where they will not take you on if it's not a good fit. And they will just tell people, hey, I don't think it's, you know, you're a startup and I want to wish you the best. You shouldn't really be spending much at this stage, perhaps, or certainly, you know, I can't take you on at this. I protect my capacity for the companies that are a little further down the line. But let me point you in the right direction. Come back to me when you hit 2 million of revenue and we'll do this thing. I'm kind of plucking an example, but when you spot someone who's not the right client and you can say, hey, this is not something I'm prepared to take on, that is perfect. And when you do turn away a customer, you want to write down the details of turning that customer away and create a mini case study that you can then reference, you know, where you can say, recently I turned a customer away for this particular reason. You want to talk to your potential customers, not just about the people you've taken on, but also the people you've turned away. Really powerful part of the sales process.
How do you help people overcome the ickiness feeling of like, oh yeah, I feel like maybe it's manipulative or saying that I have finite capacity? How do you help them over that? And do you have any more examples of how to say it so that it's in alignment with their values?
Well, I think the first thing is people acknowledging that it's true. It is true that you have finite capacity. It is true that you can't just take on anyone and everything. And it could be true on many different levels. It could be true that your business does have a finite capacity. It also could be true that what you do is not for everyone, that there are going to be people who see incredibly high value in this, and there are going to be people who don't, right? There are some people who think it's worth paying George Clooney $50 million to be in a movie, but then there are little tiny studios that wouldn't pay $50 million for George Clooney. They couldn't handle that. They don't have the distribution. They don't have the ability to make a George Clooney purchase work for them. So, you know, George Clooney would be unethical to take the $50 million from them, probably, because it's just not a good fit. So the first thing is just acknowledging that it is actually true and that you're discussing something that's true and that's also in the customer's interest. So you're stating a series of things that are true. And it's, I don't have unlimited capacity and what I do is not for everyone. And it's also setting expectations. So the way I would say this is, I would say something like, hey, Chris, thank you so much for taking the assessment. I've already had a glance at it and there's some really interesting things to come out of that. I want to have a chat with you about your results. I just need to frame up in advance though, as far as working together as a client, I have limited capacity and what I do is not for everyone. So at the end of the meeting, I'd love to make some recommendations. And those recommendations could be that we work together, or it could be that I recommend some resources or I recommend some other places you could go where you get exactly your next steps perfectly. How does that sound? Oh, yeah, that sounds pretty good. And I say, great, let's have a meeting and let's discuss the results that you got. And then I might say things like, this assessment highlighted that your brand is not connecting with a younger demographic. Do you think that is actually genuinely a problem? Or do you think you don't even need to connect with that younger demographic? Like, is, you know, are you happy to not connect with that younger demographic? Oh no, we want to. What do you see as the value of that marketplace? Right? So when you think about that younger demographic, what sort of value do you like 3 years from now, if you could wave a magic wand, what sort of revenue would you like to be doing with that younger demographic? Okay, interesting. So that's a $3 million problem that we need to solve. Okay, cool. So I'm going through the process, but I'm talking very much authoritatively because they gave me the data that we're now discussing.
I like that. And I want to put this in context for people who I think are listening to us. If you're a fan of mine, then you know you must be narrowly positioned. You must be niched. You must be selective with who you work with. Ron Baker talks about this in his book, Implementing Value Pricing. We must be discriminatory, because not everybody's a good fit for us. And let me frame this so it doesn't sound so horrible to you. I only want to take on clients who I am very confident that we can hit it out of the park for them, because I take the responsibility of taking their money quite seriously. I don't want to just go through the motions and phone it in, take their money and do something. And especially, I want to avoid the clients who I know are going to be a poor fit for me. They're going to be a pain in the ass. They want to drive and pixel F me to death. And I'm like, I don't want that kind of client. Or from a coach's point of view, I want to work with people who have a strong bias or tendency towards action, not just talk, not just to overthink. And because they're going to get the results and I'm going to feel really good because we're moving together. And I'm in the business of selling transformation. So if somebody's not committed to this, don't want to do the work or have a finite fixed mindset, well, I think there's a coach and a solution for you. It's just not going to be me, because I want to enjoy the work that I'm doing. So imagine yourself in a position where you get to design your ideal dream client. and that's the only client who would come work with you. Maybe it's a vertical, it's like an industry. Maybe it's a team size or their willingness to spend money because they believe you got to spend money to make money, and they have high taste and they have high standards and they're ethical business people. Yeah, that's who you would want to work with if you could do that. And the analog to this is when we're out there as a single person, we're not just looking for just anybody unless you're just looking for a quick hookup. You're looking for the right person. And so you have to have parameters in your mind as to who you're looking for, such that when you find that person, you're going to be in a state of bliss because you're so aligned on so many levels. And I think their logic brain turns off. Like, that's how I live in 99% of my life. But the 1%, as it relates to my business, I'm going to throw out all logic, all my rules. I'm just going to do it in a hazard, kind of unintentional way.
One of the things that you can do is you can throw some of the stuff you just mentioned, you can also throw into the assessment as a question. So you could put a question into the quiz, like, when you're working with a supplier, a trusted supplier, to what degree do you like to go hands-on micromanage versus hands-off, we'll leave you to it and show us at the end? And you could actually just have a sliding scale and they could slide up to micromanage or they could say complete hands-off. And then when you talk to them, you could say, hey, look, I would love to take you on as a client, but there's one thing that is in the back of my mind. You put yourself as a 4 out of 5 on the micromanage scale, which I appreciate the honesty that that's your style. For me personally, I like to work with 1s and 2s. I can't take you on if you want to come on and do the 4 out of 5 micromanaging thing. What are your thoughts on that? And they might say, well, you know what? If we trust you, if we know that you know, you're an award-winning supplier, et cetera, maybe we could go hands off and say, okay, I'll take you on, but I need you to agree in writing up front that we're not doing the micromanaging thing because you identified this in the quiz. So you can actually play that game of having your rules built into the quiz so that you can discuss it with people and say, you know, I just want to get agreement up front that this isn't going to fly.
I love that. Okay. You've just given us a strategy on potentially how to hold the higher ground. You don't need to be superior to the client, but you don't want to be inferior to them. You want to take the higher ground. So by being clear who you like to work with and building into the quiz, you get to say, I'm not saying you're a bad person. I'm not saying I'm right and you're wrong, but this is who I like to work with. And so how fixed are we here? And if we are, I have other recommendations for you. And if there's some flexibility here and you're willing to let me drive, and this is a beautiful thing. When someone says, I like to drive, but I like you, I trust you, and you've earned my respect, here, you take the wheel. What an incredible transformation that's going to be for you. So if nothing else in your relationship, forget about leads and all this stuff. At least now you know how to have a dialogue with your prospect so that they allow you to do your best work. So I want to ask everybody right now, again, this is the second moment and maybe our final moment here. I'm going to ask you pause, stop the recording, reflect on what we just said. Listen for the one thing that was a light bulb moment for you. What is an aha moment? Think about that and then write that down and then ask yourself, what are the steps that I need to take in the next 24, 48 hours so that I can implement some version of this? Because like I said, I like people who take action. It's the biggest predictor of future success in my opinion. So let's prove ourselves to ourselves that we have a heavy bias towards action, everybody. Okay, Daniel. Where do we go from here?
So the easy way to implement this is using scoreapp.com, and we can obviously give you a link, but essentially you just set up a free account, and the free account is indefinitely free and you only pay when you want to scale up. So when you want to generate hundreds of leads or thousands of leads per month. So it's really nice that you can test this. You can see if it works for you. You can talk about it and discuss it internally in your office with visibility of how the system works. And inside there, you can also download the free book of scorecard marketing. So you don't have to, you know, if you like to read up on the strategy, you can actually jump in and download that. And every week we do something called Setup and Score, where our head of customer success does a weekly like technical workshop and how to implement. So essentially you can tinker with this until you get it right. You can test it out. You can run some micro campaigns. And then when you're ready, you just kind of subscribe at the level that you want to. And by the way, subscription is like, $29 a month, $39 a month, $59 a month. It's like, it's not $500 or $1,000 or anything like that. It's very affordable. This is designed for creators. It's designed for entrepreneurs. We've got a global audience of people in 150 countries. So we've priced it, so it's affordable for entrepreneurs all over the world.
Mm. I'm glad you mentioned the price point. First of all, it's free to try until you get to a certain point where you're actually having success. So in theory, you're making money And then you're able to use that money and go ahead and buy it. It's a no-brainer. And even at the highest tiers, it's super, super affordable. In case people are like listening to this thinking, oh, this is wonderful. Here comes the price point. It's not going to be within reach. And so we will include links in the show notes or the description. Make sure you check that out. Of course, they'll be right there and I'll pin it to the comments so that you don't have to go searching for it. I love it. Daniel, this is awesome. I think we went deep. We covered the big concepts. And I think there are so many people that I've been seeing recently as I'm on tour and doing workshops. I talk about Score App and integrate it into the sales process and generating leads, but I kind of leave them at the altar. I don't really get into the details. So I'm going to send this link to every single person who's attended one of our workshops because I've mentioned it. And now I think they need to watch this video. I'm going to ask you, audience, to take action today, to sign up for a free account. Use my link because Daniel and I are going to be tracking this to see how influential I am or how influential I think I am, which is probably what I need to say. And if it serves you, then we've solved a big problem because this year the theme is all about generating leads to create more demand than you have supply. And this is a beautiful strategy with an end-to-end solution from concept to delivery. Give it a shot. What do you have to lose, everybody? Use the link that's in the description below. Make sure if you're listening to this on the podcast, you've missed out on the visual part of this. So make sure you jump over to the YouTube channel and watch Mr. Priestley with his amazing baby hair walking us through this whole process. Daniel, is there anything else you want to say?
I just want to say thank you. That was so great. And we've met up in cities around the world and I know your audience. I know the types of people who are at your events. And I really genuinely know this is such a great fit for the types of people who follow your work. It just fits with, if people have that underlying philosophy that they've picked up from all of your content, all of the work that you do, this is just going to be a really easy, practical application of that.
Yes. And I do want to say this, okay? I'll say this and it'll sound like I'm blowing smoke up Daniel's butt here, but allow me to puff away. A lot of times you meet authors or you read their book and you're like, okay, it's pretty cool. But oftentimes when you interview them on a channel, it's like a disconnect because they're kind of like more academic. They've written the book, but they're not great speakers. They don't have these warm personalities. And I find you in a rare class of people who are like, you've written the book, super easy to understand. You understand the material, you explain it in a dynamic way, you bring charisma to it. But you and I have become professional friends, and I think also friends now, where we've seemingly have traveled the world together and we keep bumping into one another. And Daniel's a really good guy. So I enjoy your company and I enjoy the ideas that you have. And you see our audience, you know what their potential is, and you're like waving to me, hey, I got a solution that can help your community. Let's do this. And we've been talking about this, so I'm so glad here we are. It's still relatively early in the year. I'm just going to tell everybody, don't wait until like your numbers don't add up to start implementing some of these concepts. Do it right now so that you can sit back in your chair, maybe on the dock fishing with Daniel and I somewhere in the world. How wonderful would that be?
Oh, that'd be real nice. That'd be real nice.
You see where I'm going there, Daniel. Okay. All right. That's it for me. Daniel, if people want to find out more about you, where should they go?
At Daniel Priestley on any of the socials. And, you know, you and I, we've done two videos prior to this one. So there's a personal brand, key person of influence YouTube video that we did. And there's an oversubscribed YouTube video that we did. So if you, you know, if you're liking this and you want to go full immersion, there's two more videos in this series.
Yes. And there's more books that we can talk about. We'll take it one book at a time, everybody. We don't want to overwhelm you. Thank you very much, Daniel.
Cheers, guys. I'm Daniel Priestley and you're listening to The Future.
Thanks for joining us. If you haven't already, subscribe to our show on your favorite podcasting app and get new insightful episodes from us every week. The Future Podcast is hosted by Chris Doe and produced and edited by Rich Cardona Media. Thank you to Adam Sanborn for our intro music. If you enjoyed this episode, then do us a favor by reviewing and rating our show on Apple Podcasts. It will help us grow the show and make future episodes that much better. If you'd like to support the show and invest in yourself while you're at it, visit thefuture.com and you'll find video courses, digital products, and a bunch of helpful resources about design and the creative business. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.